Where you at, man?
I'm right here. I'm ready.
Let's do this. It is August 26th. This is episode 144 of the Scary Dad Podcast. Just keeps on trucking.
Yep. We'll have to do something special for 150, then 200.
Yeah. Well, you know, Florida man's getting even more and more popular these days.
Florida man, Florida child, Florida woman, Florida family. I've actually, new business, I have a Florida man story today, as a matter of fact.
Awesome. We talked a couple weeks ago about John Carpenter and his kind of filmography, and it was put upon us to go back and revisit some of these old movies. And but time and everything being what it is, I only really had a chance to watch one of them with fresh eyes the way that we'd like to do it, and that was Big Trouble in Little China.
One of the best.
Yeah, and so we sat down, put that on. Remember, the rules of fresh eyes is you have to put it in and see it as if you've never seen it before, right? Like you're just watching it in theater, you don't know what it's about. I generally like, what's helped me with the fresh eyes thing is watching movies with my wife that she's not seen before.
Reactions and everything.
Because I can see the reactions and stuff, and I kind of am watching it from a perspective of somebody that's never seen the movie. Because Big Trouble in Little China has been around so long, and it's such a classic, and it's got so many different scenes in it that are just... They're just familiar. You just don't... They're unforgettable. So then whenever you watch it kind of in order with a fresh perspective, forget how weird that movie really is.
it is a crazy movie.
But we'll get into it in just a second.
First, the old business.
All right, and this date in 1791. You used to work on a steamboat, right?
Yeah.
And this date in 1791, the steamboat was actually patented. Just thought that was a little interesting.
And it was an actual steamboat that I worked on. The first one I worked on was built in 1920. This is when that was haunted with the ghost of Mary Green and stuff. So yeah, when you only have the steam, they don't move very fast. A lot of times you want a little bit extra propulsion in these.
They move really fast back then, though, comparatively. Oh, yeah. They could go upriver.
Right.
You know. All right. On this date in 1920, the 19th Amendment gives women the right to vote. There wasn't a whole lot to happen on August 26th, historically. I mean, that's an important milestone, but that's really it for events, is a steamboat and voting women.
Right.
All right, notable births in this date in 1819. Prince Albert, the husband of Queen Victoria. You ever listen to the Lore podcast?
No. You've spoken about it, but I haven't.
He's got one called Cabinet of Curiosities, and he's talking about Queen Victoria. So when Prince Albert died, he died young. He was like in his, I think in his 30s, right? She never remarried, obviously, but she became obsessed with death. And after she died, they found she had one of her like summer homes, like this estate somewhere, that there was an area that nobody was allowed to go in except for herself. And whenever she died and they finally got into those rooms, said that there was like a museum dedicated to death back there.
Oh, wow.
Like it was full of paintings of people that she knew that had died. And it was all just kind of like,
wow.
Like it was really kind of bizarre. But yeah, she was an interesting lady. Had to get myself a bottle of water.
I understand.
I gotta wet that whistle. All right. On this date in 1940, Don LaFontaine was born. Do you know who he is or was?
No.
Have you ever listened to a movie trailer from the 80s?
Yes. You've probably heard his voice.
That deep voice in a world full of vampires. One, you know, like that guy. So like when I was a kid, I used to wonder about
who that was,
like, because he was on every movie. It didn't matter if it was a horror movie or if it was mainstream or whatever. He had like he passed away a few years ago, but he had that final kind of he was doing the Geico commercials, so they pulled him out of retirement to do that that voice, that deep voice. On this date in 1949, Leon Redbone. Musical.
Yeah.
1966, Shirley Manson, lead singer of Garbage.
Yes.
90s grunge band. That, while they were poppy and good and had a lot of great songs, there was no way that they were not going to make it because the entire band, except for her, was made up of record producers. So, they pulled some strings to get on the radio. This date in 1980, Macaulay Culkin was born.
I was thinking about him the other day. I watched My Girl the other day. And I was thinking, what ended the career of Macaulay Culkin? What was the last movie? Was the last movie he made The Good Son?
Probably.
Do you remember The Good Son?
Mm-hmm.
It kind of changed everybody's perception of the cute little boy that, you know, everybody loves to this scary evil character. And I'm wondering if that kind of hurt his career in some way.
The way he explains it.
Macaulay Culkin's awesome. I love him.
The way he explained it, he was on the Joe Rogan podcast. The way he explained it was there came a certain point where he started to get a little bit older and roles were a little bit harder to find. And he took a look around and didn't want to do it anymore, and he had plenty of money, and so he just retired.
Right.
And he's been, you know,
I'm sure he still has plenty of money.
He's got plenty of money. He was, like I said, he was on the Joe Rogan show. He was approached multiple times. They wanted him to play Leonard in The Big Bang Theory.
Okay.
And they were offering him more and more and more money, and his response was, "But then I'll have to be on set every day, and this will probably be a big hit." And then I'll have to be on a set every day for many years, and I don't want to do that.
Right.
He prefers jet setting back and forth from his house in Paris to his house in New York to his house in L.A. and just hanging out with his friends, drinking wine, and eating food.
Did you see that video that came out a couple of years ago on YouTube where he some guy calls a Lyft or like one of those rideshare services, and it pulls up, and Macaulay Culkin's driving it, and it's him playing his character from Home Alone, and he's like, it fucked him up so bad that his mom had left him by himself, that he was, you know, he was having a driver and he was filling in for his girlfriend or something. And dude, have you ever seen that video?
I haven't seen that.
It is hilarious because in the end he kidnaps the guy and ties him up in a basement. It's awesome, dude.
Yeah, he's a strange dude, but it, like, normalized him a lot being on the show because he's talking about just like,
because you don't really know much about him because he disappeared.
Yeah, but he didn't, like, a lot of it apparently was just voluntary.
Mm-hmm.
He said that, you know, when he was a kid, he was really good at remembering lines, and he was on time a lot. Like, he was always on time, and his parents would make him memorize the lines so he didn't have to use cue cards, and so he wasn't like a diva sort of thing. He'd just show up and he'd work, and he got, you know, obviously was tremendously famous, but then whenever he got old enough to start paying attention to what, you know, he did and didn't want to do, he realized that he didn't have to do anything because he was just like extremely wealthy. And he's like, so he's like almost 40 now, and
good
he's just like
him,
he's
dude.
Just like, you know, and he was talking about different movies he was in, different actors he'd worked with, like all the different stuff. Like he had a good solid grasp. He wasn't a weirdo, but he was just very much, he's like you know, I live in my loft of you know, I think this was in L.A. or something. He's like, and I'm walking down the street, and there's a store going out of business, and they got these mannequins, and it's kind of cool, and I'm thinking, maybe I can use that for something. He's like, hey, what do you want for the mannequins? And they're like, you know, we'll take $800 for the batch. And he's like, will you take five? And they're like, yeah. He's like, so then I give him $500, and he's like, so now my apartment's just full of all these mannequins that I don't know what the hell I'm going to do with.
Sounds like a cool-ass dude.
Yeah, it just sounds like a fun dude to hang out with. But he likes to drink wine, and he likes to go hang out in different cities and just be rich.
Right. It's awesome.
Sounds like a life, you know. And when you think of Macaulay Culkin and you think of this other guy born in the same time, Macaulay Culkin's always going to be like forever young. But Chris Pine, the actor that was in Star Trek,
yeah.
was in Wonder Woman, and you know, lots of movies. But Chris Pine seems like he's older than Macaulay Culkin, but
yeah.
they're born the same time. All right, notable deaths. This date in 1930, Lon Chaney passed away.
It's an icon right there.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy. It's like so many of the roles that you think Lon Chaney, a lot of it was Lon Chaney Jr. because he followed in his father's footsteps
yeah.
and you know did a lot of the horror movies and stuff. But yeah, Lon Chaney was a groundbreaker in many, many ways with acting and film.
Mm-hmm.
Was it The Man of a Thousand Faces?
Yeah, that was him.
Right. 1977, H.A. Ray. He's the author who came up with Curious George.
Okay.
Have you read Curious George in a...
It's been a minute.
Yeah, they would not make it... They would not be published today. Because if you read the original... My kids have the Curious George book, and I read it to them, and they're, you know, they still like it every now and then. But, like, straight up, like, with all of our animal rights and smoking and international stuff and, like, just different things that he does. It's like, first of all, the man in the yellow hat never explains why he was in Africa. But he saw a monkey and decided he wanted to take it home.
Yeah.
So he reaches over and like throws him in a sack and then carries him onto a boat and takes him home to the city. And then George is smoking pipes and getting into trouble and calls the fire department and report, you know, like prank calls the fire department and gets himself thrown in jail, and then he bashes, like he slams a cop on the head and escapes jail and like causes a riot basically. It's like, ooh, this is a fun little children's story. This monkey's running around messing shit up. And it's Dayton. 2017, we lost director Tobe Hooper. Big loss to the horror community.
No doubt.
I mean, just Poltergeist and Texas Chainsaw Massacre alone just absolutely changed the horror genres.
Right.
Period. Like,
right.
There were the way the movies were made before Chainsaw Massacre, and then there's the way the movies are made afterwards.
Right.
And incomparable Tobe Hooper. So let's drink one to him.
Definitely, man. And brush up on your Tobe Hooper trivia, because we will be having him as a category in our Horror Jeopardy at the Scary Dad Show. So
talk more about Horror Jeopardy. What we got going on with that?
Horror Jeopardy is going to be a blast. It basically is going to be played the same way as regular Jeopardy. The way we're going to select contestants is anybody attending the show, you can pre-register to be in the pool that we're going to select three contestants for each day. We're going to do one round on Saturday and one round on Sunday. The winner of each round will receive $50 to spend at the Scary Dad Show with our vendors. So it's going to be a lot of fun. We got a lot of cool questions. Test your horror trivia. Let's see what you got. It's going to be fun.
That sounds awesome. You sent me the board the other day, and I was like flipping tiles and like, oh, dude, that's awesome.
And I fixed that final Jeopardy question. Don't worry about
that. That was the only, like, out of a criticism of, like, however many questions that you had.
Right, it was like 25 different separate questions.
I was like, this one's a little easy for final Jeopardy.
I'll fix that one, so.
All right, well, that's what it is for the old business. Let's take a break, and we'll come right back.
In a world in the year 2017.
In a time of tradition,
in a city where anything can happen,
in a war that isn't his,
every day in New York City, on the Miami Police Force, in the Deep South,
from the sewers of Gotham, from the rooftops of Gotham, above Gotham,
within this skyscraper high above the city, in a town driven by competition, in a world that's powered by violence, it's Christmas Eve in L.A. On New Year's Eve of the last decade of the 20th century, Detectives Mike Lowry and Marcus Burnett,
Special Agent John Krueger.
Harry Tasker,
and New York cop John McClane.
They're not just partners. They were three cops who had nothing in common.
They are America's first line of defense.
But no matter how much you love them,
all that stands between a city and a disaster is a man.
A reluctant soldier.
An ex-con.
The perfect enemy.
They found him near a plane crash.
What if you couldn't remember?
The most deadly submarine ever built.
Secrets have a way of coming back to haunt you.
When ghosts start arriving by the boatload,
it was the perfect crime.
They thought they had it all figured out.
But there was one thing they didn't plan on.
Now, they're about to collide.
One bullet at a time.
They can't change course.
But he doesn't have a choice.
His loyalty is to a child.
Fighting for everything he holds dear.
He's going to have to save her.
The only thing more dangerous than what he knows is the end of a man's journey.
He's back.
For good, for justice, for freedom, for family, for keeps.
The passion is real.
They don't follow the rules. They make them.
This summer.
This fall.
This Thanksgiving.
But this Christmas.
This holiday season.
Academy Award winner Kevin Spacey.
Antonio Banderas.
Tom Hanks.
Kim Basinger.
Mel Gibson.
Brad Pitt.
Bruce Willis.
Sean Connery.
Robin Williams.
Denzel Washington.
Joe Pesci.
Samuel L. Jackson.
Ed Harris.
Ed Harris.
Ed Harris.
Ed Harris.
Ed Harris.
And Ed Harris.
The Long
Hunt.
For Legends of the English
Terminator Cousin
Part 3.
Cruise Control.
I'd like a can of peas, please.
Here we are again.
Here we are. Mr. Gomez.
New business is new business, and this is new business.
Okay, got a lot of silly stuff this week, but it's always fun to talk about. Did you hear about Miss Jamie Biscaglia?
I don't think so.
Who, she was at a fishing tournament. And apparently, this fishing tournament, there was a picture contest, you know, to get the goofiest picture posted on Instagram with the hashtag, and you'll win a prize. Well, good old Jamie found a small octopus swimming around in the water. So she thought it would be really, really cool to put this octopus on my face and take a picture.
Oh, no.
What she didn't realize is that an octopus has a very sharp beak that it can bite with, and it releases a toxin that hurts a lot. But needless to say, she could not get the octopus off of her face. When she went to pull it off, it clenched down even tighter. She had to go through several rounds of antibiotics, and she put, hindsight now and looking back, I probably made a big mistake.
You think?
There are pictures, it's funny, because there's pictures of her with the octopus on her face, and then like after pictures of her just miserable in the hospital. So yeah, so the moral to the story is, do not put a octopus on your face to take a picture.
Yeah, don't mess with octopuses anyway, man. They're there's a video on Reddit, and it's actually, if they were to scale it up, it was absolutely terrifying. But what it shows is there's like this crab out of the water sunning itself on a rock in somewhere, and it's like there's it's kind of up near the shore, and there's this rocks sitting in the water, and there's crabs sitting on the rock, and this freaking octopus crawls up out of the water, runs over on its tentacles like a cartoon you'd see. Uh-huh. Runs over on its tentacles, grabs the crab, picks it up, and turns around and runs back into the water and starts tearing up at the crab. And the crab's like trying to bite at it, but the tentacles are all flying, and like it's dramatic as hell. It's awesome. But yeah, I didn't realize that they were so aggressive.
Oh yeah, yeah, they can be for sure. And they just have so many ways of just getting you, holding on. You can't get rid of it.
Yeah, that's the whole point. Like once they catch something, yeah, they had that thing like. Years ago, they had at some aquarium, the sharks kept disappearing, and they couldn't figure out where the sharks were going, because they'd have, like 10 sharks today and like 9 sharks the next. So they set up a camera, and you see this, it's a giant Pacific octopus, and it's just kind of hanging out, and it's like laying on the bottom of the thing. The shark kind of swims by, and the octopus reaches up, grabs it, wraps it up, and starts chomping down. It eats the shark. Like, straight up. Just like,
that's awesome, dude. I'd like to see that.
Yeah.
Okay. 18-year-old Fort Worth resident Jonathan Forseth has done the horror community a huge favor and given everybody something they could put on a bucket list. What Jonathan did is, he said he fell asleep one night. He posted something on Twitter. Fell asleep one night, it had like 50 likes. And when he woke up, it had 2,000 likes. And before he knew it, it had 40,000 likes. But what Jonathan put together is a haunted road trip for Texas. And it's pretty cool. It starts off in Dallas, and it basically makes one big loop going back to Dallas to where, you know, if you want to see some of the more haunted places in Texas, you can check out this road map. It includes some locations that it includes. Is there something called the Donkey Lady Bridge in San Antonio? He includes the Baker's Hotel in Mineral Wells, Yorktown Memorial Hospital, the Killing Fields near Galveston that we're familiar with, Stagecoach Road in Marshall, Texas, and Goatman's Bridge in Denton. So he's put together, it's pretty cool. It does dip into Shreveport in Louisiana a little bit, then comes back down into Texas and heads over to Houston. So nice. It's pretty neat. You can check it out. It definitely something that would be worthwhile checking into if you have some time. And let's move over to this. Susie Torres, I thought this was a cool story. This woman thought she had water in her ear that she couldn't get rid of, okay? So she goes to the doctor. They start looking. The nurse looks in her ear and kind of panics and says, hey, I need to go ahead and get some help in here. So she goes and gets some other doctors and lets her know, it looks like you have an insect in your ear. So they look a little bit closer and he said, hey, don't freak out, but it looks like you have a spider in your ear. Next thing you know, they pull a brown recluse spider out of this woman's ear.
If that spider would have bit her, she would have died.
Yes. So once they got it out, they went ahead, double-checked just to make sure it hadn't bit her or anything. But yeah, could you imagine going to sleep and waking up with a brown recluse in your ear? That would just be insane. Okay, we've spoken
about... Do you remember Arachnophobia?
Oh, yeah. That's like Arachnophobia 2 right there.
Dude, I'm telling you, like that movie was billed as a comedy.
Oh, excuse the shit out of it, John. Man, I got a VHS
that,
over there.
I still have... Like, I'll think of scenes from that movie, like whenever they're eating the popcorn or whatever, yeah. Like this different thing. And I'll just shudder. And spiders don't bother me really.
When the girl's taking the shower and she doesn't realize the web is all, her hands is in it, she's rubbing it in her hair and the spider's just crawling across. Mm-hmm.
That's a rough movie, dude.
I don't know how people can be scared of roaches when spiders exist.
Right.
All right, we've talked about attacks by animals before. Did a whole show about it. And one of these, remember we talked about wolves, they rarely kill people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, recently a New Jersey family was on a camping trip in Canada and ended up having just a terrifying experience. While they were sleeping at night, all of a sudden a wolf ripped apart their tent, grabbed the dad by his leg, and started dragging him out. They were attacked by the wolf somewhere around midnight. Said it was like something out of a horror movie. When the wolf came to attack, the dad jumped in front of the wife and their kids. Wolf decided to go ahead and started tearing into his leg. He tried to battle it, get away. Luckily, someone that, as he was being dragged away by the wolf, someone in the neighboring tent came over, started beating on the wolf, kicking it and everything. It finally let go and took off. And once the guy distracted the wolf, the family ran to their car and just tried to compose themselves and figure out what was going on. He ended up being taken to the hospital. Had defensive wounds in his hands and his arms, and it had tore his leg up. Could you imagine being asleep at night and all of a sudden this huge wolf jumps in and just starts dragging you out into the woods to kill you, man? It is just insane. Like I said, straight out of a horror movie.
That is. Must have been a hungry wolf, though, because wolves don't generally attack people.
Right. There had to be something going on with that wolf for sure. We know they hunt at night, of course, but still, it just pretty crazy. Okay, so there's this woman, Florida woman, that needs to really stop trying to date. Apparently, she has had a spate of pretty bad incidents in the dating world, and recently she, the first incident she has, She tried to go on a date with a guy, and he ended up becoming very violent and attacked her. She had to call the police and have him arrested. She decided to go ahead and date again. So she goes on a date. They go to dinner. They're leaving the vehicle, and the cops try to pull the guy over. All of a sudden, there's rollers behind him, and the guy takes off. She ends up getting involved in a high-speed chase with her new date. The dude ended up having stopping the car, bailed out. Cops ran up, guns drawn. She was like, look, I barely know this guy. We just got through eating dinner. Ended up there was a warrant for his arrest. He didn't have a – he had a suspended license, all kind of other stuff. But, yeah, could you imagine – being this poor woman? That's, you know, just hilarious. Give up. Just stop. You know, they were pulling him over for a tag violation, and he just freaked out. And next thing you know, they're on a high-speed chase. Okay, video has come out from a neighborhood in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, called Oakland Park. And what happened is this guy was jogging through his neighborhood and noticed another guy perusing through a bunch of items that had been put on the side of the road for disposal from that house. So as he's jogging by, it's a big, long, you know, bunch of crap somebody cleaned out of the garage, basically. He notices a cart that's there at the end of the trash pile. So he stops, jogs back, says, hey, you know, I can actually use this. Well, the first guy that was on the other end of the trash pile felt as though he had first right of refusal for anything in this trash pile because he was the first one there. So as the guy is bringing the cart back to his house, he hears somebody yelling behind him and arguing. It was the first guy that had been rummaging through armed with a ninja sword. And he attacked the man over the black cart that he had taken because he was not allowed to grab it himself. So, yeah, the video is hilarious, dude. The pictures are pretty funny. Here's one of the stills of the guy bringing the sword down, trying to bring the pain to the man with the cart. So, just so you know, if you ever see somebody going through a pile of trash, he has first right of refusal. Let him go through everything first, or go behind him and go through the stuff he's already been through. Don't just skip to the end of the pile. Don't
skip to the end and grab your cart.
Try to grab whatever you want, thinking that you have the right to. So that's what I got for today.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
We can move on and get ready to talk about a little Big Trouble.
All right, let's do it.
This is Jack Burton in the Pork Chop Express, and I'm talking to whoever's listening out there. It's a pretty amazing planet we live on here. And a man would have to be some kind of fool to think we're all alone in this universe.
There is a hidden world where ancient evil weaves a modern mystery.
What's going on here? Is this some kind of...
magic. The darkest magic.
Ow! They call it Little China.
Finally, we shall bring order out of chaos.
It's where Big Trouble was waiting for Jack Burton.
Who?
Jack Burton. Me.
Jack.
Jack.
Jack!
They told him to go to hell.
You make one move.
And that's just where he's going.
Somebody, I don't care who, tell me what is going on.
There are many mysteries, many unanswerable questions, even in a life as short as yours.
My destiny rests in your capable hands.
Hey, I'll do my best.
This is gonna take Cracker Jack timing, Wang.
One, two, three.
We may be trapped.
Total concentration.
Safety!
Yeah.
You ready, Jack?
I was born ready.
Way to go, Jack.
Jack Burton's coming to rescue your summer.
Hey, what more can a guy ask for?
20th Century Fox presents Kurt Russell in John Carpenter's Big Trouble in Little China.
It's on the reflexes.
Okay, so you're a child of the 80s. How many times do you think you've seen Big Trouble?
Oh, there's no way I could count.
But how many times have you seen it all the way through from beginning to end without like it being on TV with commercials or edited? Like, I mean, it's one of those things that's just kind of in your head. Like, I don't think I've watched it all the way through as a, like, sit down and watch the opening credits to the end credits.
As an adult, I've watched it all the way through 10 times.
Okay.
So
I haven't. I don't get a whole lot of opportunities to watch movies, and some of them are just so in my brain that I just don't.
It's one of those movies where if I can't figure out what I want to watch, I know that I'm going to enjoy. Kind of like RoboCop.
If I can't find
something that I want to watch, I know that I'll enjoy watching this one again.
So. But after our conversation the other night, I'm sitting there being like, man, I don't think I've seen Big Trouble all the way through in a while. You know, go ahead and... Anyway, I picked up a copy of it and sat down with the wife. It's like, okay, I'm going to watch this. And one thing that struck me is just... It never stops. Like, it starts with them basically just playing a game of cards. And then it turns into what it turns into. And it's just... Every couple of minutes, like, every scene that changes, it just becomes more and more bizarre. And, like... I've always embraced the bizarreness, but it didn't occur to me that it just escalates, like, from the beginning. Like, it's just like, okay, well, this is weird. Well, that's weirder. Well, no, that's even weirder. And, like, now there's, like, a...
Where are we going with this?
Yeah. Now there's, like, a little globby ball thing that's just kind of floating in the air. Like, what is this?
Well, one of the things that I really...
It's like, what I was going to get to is I can't imagine, like, I imagine watching it. I can't imagine reading the script for that. And being like, okay, let's do this.
Well, it plays like a fever dream.
Yeah.
You know, just like Maximum Overdrive. It's like a fever dream. And one thing that I noticed with it along the same lines, that movie is not one style of filmmaking. Because, you know, I'm watching it and, you know, the kidnapping scene at the airport. Whenever the bad guys are driving away from the car. It was like Clockwork Orange all of a sudden.
Yeah.
It was reminiscent of Clockwork Orange for some reason. And it just, the style of film is not the same throughout this entire movie. Whenever they, when they first go into the alley, when they're trying to find the Lords of Death, it reminded me of so bullshit. I was like, did I just enter Narnia? Because they turn into this alleyway and it's like they're in a different dimension.
Yeah.
You know, the street is right there. They just turned. There's traffic right there, but all of a sudden it's foggy and there's no noise. And it's like it's nighttime.
And then you got all these guys. Yeah. And then you got all these. You got what looks like a funeral procession of the guys in the white outfits. And then you've got the guys in the black outfits. And then you're like, okay, well, it's a rival gang. It's some, like you say, it's weird. But then they've all got, like, machine guns.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay. Like, but then the machine guns don't kill certain people, but you can stab them with a sword and they die.
Right.
It's like...
And whose funeral have you ever known where the things they use to carry the coffin can easily be turned into weapons?
Yeah.
Because, you know, if they pull the rods out, then it's like an asp. It's like one of those police batons. They go ahead and kick it out. You know, they were obviously expecting something to happen. Apparently, that's an upgrade for your casket you can get, is to have it armed with weapons.
And I was thinking how badass that was. They're like, well, we got a little funeral procession going on, but now I got to stop and beat some ass real fast. But I liked too, one thing that I probably never noticed it before, but like Jack, he does not like it's Wang that's pretty much the main character in this movie. Like,
yeah,
Kurt Russell, Jack Burton
is helping his friend find.
I mean, he's dropping lines and he's a badass and he's cool, but he's standing around being like, what the hell is going on half the time while everybody else is
doing stuff. He's in somebody else's world.
Yeah, like everybody else is doing stuff and he's just standing there being like, what the hell? Like, how did I go from a card game to, like, over a matter of, like, was it $1,500?
Yeah.
Like, that's what he lost or that's what he won.
Yeah, that's one of the things.
Wayne went double or nothing and it's like, okay, well, you know, I need $1,500. And it's like, okay, you're going to, like, a buddy thing to this weird... like samurai movie, like
right.
that.
If, you know, that's another thing that I wish they would have, or, you know, I know it would have, like, kind of messed the movie up, but if they could have delved a little bit more, I've always been fascinated and wondered and just come up with different theories in my own mind about the history between Jack and Wang Chi.
Yeah.
How did they meet? Because, you know, at one point when they do the toast, they start doing a military-type toast. And I'm like, were they in the military together? You know, did they serve somewhere together? How did they become friends? But it couldn't have been that because Wang Chi mentions that he came to the country 5 years ago and been working his butt off to bring his woman there. So
yeah.
He wasn't born and raised in the United States. So I would love to know more. Because they give subtle hints as, you know, what it could be, but, you know, how did those two guys meet and become such good friends?
Yeah, well, that's one of those things that have you seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
No,
the new Quentin Tarantino
yet.
Movie? No. There's some controversy about it because there's a scene in the movie where Bruce Lee...
Yeah, I've heard about that, his daughter coming out.
And honestly, because I saw it, I didn't really think it was too much of it because I knew Bruce Lee in real life was kind of a braggart. He was kind of a larger than life personality, and he was a karate teacher, and he was karate teacher to the stars, and he was making TV shows, and he was optioning movies, and, you know, he had a reason to have kind of a big head, but he was also fighting against, like, the Asian racism, right?
Right.
So he had to be, whatever he was, he had to be ultra it in order to stay on top of the game. And he got screwed over left and right anyway. But there's a scene where Brad Pitt's character, Bruce Lee's sitting there talking smack, and Brad Pitt's character laughs at him. And the whole thing is set up to show how badass Brad Pitt's character is.
Yeah.
But they say, okay, three rounds... No hitting in the face, and we'll see who wins. So it's a friendly competition, and Brad Pitt's kind of looking at the ground. Bruce Lee kicks him in the chest, knocks him down, kicks him hard, drops his ass. So Brad Pitt gets up, and Bruce Lee's kind of looking, like, not paying attention. He underestimates him, and he comes in for another kick, and Brad Pitt kind of body slams him into a car, and it completely, like, shocks Bruce. He's like, can't believe that he's just been dropped. So they get up to go for round three, and you can see Bruce is about to lay him out. Like, Bruce completely underestimated him in that second round, and then the fight gets broken up or whatever. But I thought it was interesting because Bruce Lee's been built up to be this, like, he's like magic. And he was not magic. He was a human. He was a freaking awesome one, but he could be beat, obviously.
Yeah.
But then, like, the controversy is talking about, like, watching Big Trouble in Little China and Jack Burton's kind of role in it. It's almost like they wanted to make a movie about Wang, but they had to put
a white guy
in it and in the lead. But Jack's more of, like, Wang's sidekick in the movie
more than
the other way around. The way it's kind of presented. But Jack's just along for the ride. Wang's the one.
He's in their world, yeah.
And Wang's going to rescue his girlfriend. You know, like, he's on a mission to save her, and Jack's just along for the ride.
Right.
So I'd never seen, like, I'd always thought of Jack as the main character, but he really kind of wasn't.
Yeah, yeah. I could see that. I could definitely see that.
How badass was Wang, man?
He was awesome.
He was freaking cool.
Now, how badass was one, you know, this is one of the things that I most fondly remember about this movie, but Victor Wong is Egg Chen. That's just scene stealer.
He's so creepy when he's all old. He's like bloodless, and he's all like, but his voice is still like...
Wait, no, that's Egg Chen.
Okay, sorry.
So this is the good guy. This Victor Wong is Egg Chen.
My bad.
Okay, no, it's okay. But yeah, he's a scene stealer. Jack's like, you got any guns? He goes, nah, but you can have this one. You feel like Dirty Harry. He's like, whatever he goes, what more could you ask for? A six demon bag.
Yeah, that was...
I mean, it's just when he's drinking and he does that crooked eye and everything. I mean, it's Victor Wong is awesome.
Well, also too, because he's in that world and none of this stuff is weird to him. So he's not like, that's one thing about the movie is Jack's like, what the hell's going on? And they're like kind of giving him they're doling out kind of some exposition, but they're not telling him what's going on.
Yeah.
And when they do, they tell him just bizarre shit as if it's just it's
but like, that's probably why they didn't tell him to begin with, because there's no way who would believe that.
Well, right, but he like, so Jack runs over, you know, he runs over the ghost and he's like, what is going on? And they're like, oh, that's this guy, he's like, he's you know, a bodiless demon guy for that's been cursed for 2,000 years. Anyway, on with the show. And he's just kind of like, what the?
2,258 years to be exact.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I actually, I meant to look it up because I think it's been 2,258 years he's been cursed, and the amount of money that he owed him was 1,100, and I couldn't remember what it was. And I started thinking, was the bet for $2,258? Is there a connection there? But I never got a chance to look it up, so I messed up on that one. And the other David Lopan is also played by a very famous another Asian character actor that I cannot remember his name, so I'm trying to remember right now. Do you remember what his name is?
Not off the top of my head.
Because he's another one that has been in so many movies, and I think he only recently passed away, actually. But yeah, another scene stealer. I mean, when he's the old creepy man in the...
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, when I got him confused, and that's what I was saying, it's like, because his voice doesn't look like his body.
Yeah.
Like, you would think somebody that looks like that would have an old raspy voice, but instead he's just got a very loud and clear and friendly voice. You know, and he's just very matter of fact, and I'm going to get this green-eyed girl, and I'm just going to sacrifice her, and I'm going to be alive again. It's all good. And he's like, doesn't really have much of an accent. And
James Hong is his
name.
James Hong.
He was awesome. Like, I love that guy.
Oh, yeah.
He's
such a badass, dude.
Well, the thing was, and he was like the epitome of pure evil, but he was so charismatic and smiley that he didn't ever really feel like he wasn't menacing. He was just like, he was just doing his shit. You
right.
know, he was just kind of like, well, this is what I got to do. Got to get a green-eyed Chinese lady. Like, whatever. I've had them all before. I've had them before, but they don't always work. Like.
Now, watching the movie also, some of the things that I just found just weird and not very factual is, who drives a rig everywhere they go?
Somebody doesn't have another car.
Yeah, but you got a truck you can use. You got Wang Ji's truck you can
use. Yeah, that's true.
But you're driving your rig everywhere you go, down alleys. What alley is big enough to go ahead and support an 18-wheeler just driving through it? The other thing is, when they're in the airport and they run out and he hollers at Gracie, call the cops. She leaves. She doesn't run inside to call the cops. She gets in her car and she hauls ass. There's no cell phones back then.
Yeah.
So she's not calling the cops for her. That's another one that I was like, what the hell's going on?
Well, she knew what was going on.
Yeah.
Like, she'd been investigating the whole situation, so she knew what was up. I don't think she realized that, you know, he was a 2,000-year-old demon. She was just, you know, he was investigating the crime lord.
Right.
But still, she knew kind of what was up behind the scenes, and she's on it.
Right.
Whereas Jack's just like, I don't understand. Like, they spent all night drinking and gambling. You know that they'd have been tired. Like, all this shit just keeps happening. What about just like the random demons, monsters crawling out of things?
Well, that's what I was going to say. The other thing is, it's weird how the movie starts off. It's, you know, there's a fight scene in the alley with guns. You know, guns are applicable. Whenever the storms show up, the storms, you can tell they have magic powers, but they're actually using weapons to fight.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next thing you know, you're in this other world there, this fantasy world with beast and magic that there's no point in having guns or weapons because they're going to be useless anyway.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was saying, is because was it they shot... they shot at the storms. Yeah, they hit them with the bullets, and nothing hit them.
Nothing hurt them.
But then later on, they stab a storm with a sword, and he blows up, like he dies.
Right.
And
he drank the potion.
So, like the swords are useful, but the guns are not so much.
Right.
But then other people get shot with it. Like it's just kind of like they were like, okay, guns affect you guys and not you guys. So y'all fall and y'all don't.
Speaking of the storms dying, whenever thunder dies, doesn't he remind you of a Garbage Pail Kid? He's the one that blows up.
Yeah.
He looks just like he'd be on a Garbage Pail Kid card. It's so awesome.
They're like run away.
That was one of my favorite scenes as a kid. I just love seeing whenever he blew up.
they cut to the scene of the hallway and his like body just kind of flies out the door.
But the storms are another thing. They're awesome.
Oh yeah,
they've influenced so much. Mortal Kombat. There's Mortal Kombat characters that wouldn't exist if it wasn't for this movie.
Yeah, Raiden is the Storm
from
Big Trouble
and
with the electricity. He was always my favorite one.
Yeah,
of the storms was.
Oh, yeah, you ride on lightning.
You know, and but it's funny too because like you would think because like whenever they're trying to crawl up through the thing and he's down there and he's trying to get them and they like why doesn't he just like launch some lightning. Like, he's trying to catch him, but he could just... he doesn't.
And there's another thing that I confirmed this afterwards whenever I was looking for my fun facts about Big Trouble in Little China, but I never put two and two together, but at the end, when Jack Burton's driving down the road, okay, and he's like, on a night when the heavens are opening up and it's lightning, and he's talking about the storms.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually referencing all the stuff that he had just been through. And I was like, I just realized that this last time that I watched it. All the times that I watched this movie, I never made the connection.
Well, he's got that demon crawling.
And the demon's in the back. Yeah, the demon's hits to ride on the truck and is riding with him. But
what was up with that guy?
I don't know. He didn't show up much. He stole Gracie Law, and he was easy to beat.
Yeah. He's just one of many bizarre things in that entire, right. Like, the elevator that goes into the water, and then they
right.
get out of the elevator. And
all the different hells.
The
upside-down sitters.
Yeah, they're you know, up in the water with all the corpses and stuff. And, like, all of those things were not real hard to get out of either. Like, they got out of them pretty relatively easily, and but it's just like keeps getting weirder and weirder. It's like it's like Beetlejuice.
But that kind of goes, I think, just that monster that was on the back of the truck, and also the eyeball thing, the spy for David Lopan. Just 2,258 years of living, you collect a lot of oddities.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, he's basically Robert Ripley with all he has the storms that he's collected. He has all these things, and this is another thing. Why are the storms so loyal to David Lopan?
Right.
I would love to get some backstory on that. Does he have a six demon bag where he has his souls in it or something?
Yeah. Well, that was weird because I've never really paid too close attention because it's such a fast moving narrative that there are a lot of questions if you stop and think about it, like you say, why the storm's loyal to David, but like if he was the one that was cursed by the demons, how is he controlling other demons?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like why are they
so I mean it doesn't make sense, but it's still a lot of fun.
And the other thing about just the different movie styles is you go from you got David Lopan's, you got the business, and inside the business, it looks like a Oriental palace.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just beautiful. And then downstairs, you have this weird neon light, you know, underground
looks like basement a mall.
With a giant skull. You know, where are we going with this?
It's like neon.
It's like neon lights bordering everything, and where did this come from? Most of underground Chinatown, like they showed, is the black blood of the earth. He's like, you mean oil? No, I mean black blood of the earth. And there's caves and everything. All of a sudden, you go into this mall, you said.
There sure were a lot of guys too.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of cannon fodder and like on both sides, but then it's like you got the white guy, the white geed guys, and the black geed guys, and like at different times, like they're on different sides. And,
right. When shit went down with the storms, and that's another thing. When shit went down with the storms, apparently the guys in the black and red turbans, they were fighting against the storms, but they're also loyal to David Lopan. So are they you saying that they've never seen the storms before?
Yeah.
Because apparently they had to have, since they worked. That is another confusing thing.
Or, well, actually, what I think was maybe they hadn't seen the storms before. Maybe the storms were there because they were getting close
to finding a green-eyed girl.
Yeah. So maybe he conjured them, and whenever they saw him, they're like, oh, shit, I don't know what this is.
Right, because all of a sudden, they start fighting together. That's one thing. They start fighting each other, and they realize they had a common enemy.
Yeah. So, and the storms were all dressed in white, too. So, yeah.
Storms are badass.
The storms are cool. Because that's... I mean, well, that's what you know about Big Trouble. If you've never seen it...
You know the storms.
You know the storms.
We should dress up like them for the show.
Dude, what are we dressing up for the show? I'm going to do the devil again because it's just easy.
I was going to see if you want to dress up like the Frog Brothers, but...
Well, maybe. I don't know.
But I didn't know if you were doing a family costume again, but I was going to see if you wanted to dress up like the Frog Brothers because that would be easy.
That's true.
It wouldn't be too hot. There's no mask involved.
Gotta have a mullet, though.
The wigs are fine. Easy.
I don't know. We'll figure that one out. Because we've been kicking it around. So, I can't reveal what we're doing for the family costume at the house party. But thing is, you can see John Carpenter all over it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's very definitive, his style in...
The biggest part that I saw as far as the John Carpenter influence is the music. I mean, John Carpenter does the scores for his movies himself. He's a musician.
Mm-hmm.
And the music is so John Carpenter. I mean, it's just—it's straight up. It's Escape from L.A. It's just everything. It's Escape from New York. I'm saying.
Yeah.
Just that music tie-in. If you watch—I know you didn't watch it because you didn't have it—but Mouth of Madness. I mean, it's just—you can tell he made that score.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just obvious that he had an influence in it.
Yeah,
he's so good at it. He's so good at it.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking of like the kind of the texture of the film because like you say, you're going from different worlds. You're going from the real world to the weird world of the alley to the undergrounds to the different hells to, you know, the mall underground. But all of it looks like a John Carpenter movie. Like it's bizarre, but it looks like the same guy who made Christine.
Yeah.
Like the way, like his long shots and his vibrant colors and kind of the way he focuses on certain things to get your attention and stuff like that. I don't think anybody could have made that movie. Certainly not the way that he did it.
Right.
And I have to imagine that was a really hard movie to make because there's so many moving parts.
There's so many people. It's such a huge cast.
So many scenes.
Yeah.
So many different sets and different locations and. You know, you go from like kind of the big, like you say, like the temple area, like the mall, but then you're in like the caverns whenever they're creeping around and they're kind of like claustrophobic almost. The water, you know, the drowning, the underwater scenes with the corpses and stuff like that. You know, it's like also notice that it was getting more like he's leaning more and more horror as the movie goes on. It's like. Starts off as a buddy movie.
It's kind of like a goofy movie, like an
action film. But then you start getting into some real, you know, like the corpses and the hells, and, you know, the demons just kind of popping out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It's like it's kind of like you went from one thing to a haunted house. You know, he's like, well, there's nothing scary in here, so we got to add some shit.
Yeah, they added some stuff. I mean, it's a great all-around movie, and like I said, it's so many different styles in one. But they can all tie right back to Carpenter.
That was a blast.
And of
Wayne,
course,
Wayne was badass.
Yeah,
you'd think he's like the sidekick, but he's
the man. Burton's behind trying to find his knife. By the time he gets back, Wayne G is taking care of everybody. There's nobody left. And that's the other thing, just the Kurt Russell, John Carpenter vibe is there. I mean, it just looks like John Carpenter says, have fun.
Yeah. Because chews lines. Like, he's just like, you know, like, ah, I'm a badass. Like, what? You know, somebody tell me what's going on. Just like all brash. And all right, we'll get this figured out. He's completely in over his head. He has no idea what's going on. So you said you had some fun facts?
Oh, yeah. I got a whole bunch of them. One, I found this just... this would have been such a different movie, and I don't think it would have been nearly as good. But did you know the original script was a Western?
Oh, really?
Yeah. The script was actually offered to John Carpenter as a Western. They said, hey, we have this Western comedy that we want to do. And he said it was outrageously unreadable, though it had many interesting elements. So he decided to modernize it and set it in today, and that's when the script changed. So originally Jack Burton was supposed to have his horse stolen. It changed to his truck.
Yeah.
So yeah, think about how different of a movie it would have been. Just it would have been so limited with what you could do in the Wild West.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you wouldn't have airport scene. You wouldn't. There's so much you wouldn't have with the Wild West version of it. But Kurt Russell was not the number one choice to play the role of Jack Burton because the studios wanted a big name. They wanted Jack Nicholson or Clint Eastwood, and luckily they both had stuff going on. So that's when Carpenter pushed more for Kurt Russell and got Kurt Russell in. Kurt Russell was Carpenter's first choice, but it was not the movie studios.
And it would have been a different movie with either one of those guys because they're too serious. I mean, they play comedy, but they play dark comedy.
Yeah.
Eastwood and Nicholson.
Yeah. And like I told you off mic, originally, the role of Wang Chi was considered for Jackie Chan, but because of his limited English, they decided to go ahead and go with a different actor in that role. And that would have also, that's a different style actor. You know, it would have been just so many things went together to make this movie so good. You know, that. Okay. Let's see. 20th Century Fox requested the opening scene to. You know, when he's driving in the truck, Jack Burton's driving in the truck and everything. The reason they requested that scene is because, you just talked about this, the studio didn't want the fact that Jack Burton was just a bumbling sidekick and Wang Chi was the hero to be put to the front. So that's why they put the bigger name in that first scene.
Kind of establishing him.
To try to establish him as, you know, the main character. Yep.
Because again, I never even realized it until this watching that. I mean, I always knew that Wang was the badass.
Yeah.
But
the studios didn't want him to look like he was just a bumbling sidekick of the hero. They wanted to try to. And that's another. That's also why I'm reading right here. Ake Chen is being drilled about Jack Burton, and he says how Jack Burton saved everybody. That's why they added that scene to that movie.
Oh, wow.
That's pretty crazy, huh?
That is.
Because you saw it. I mean, you saw it yourself in the movie without even knowing that.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay. The you know how in the opening title they have Big Trouble in Little China, and then they have the Chinese, the Mandarin lettering in there? Mm-hmm. What that actually says is, evil spirits cause a big scene in little spiritual state.
Nice.
John Carpenter actually made Kurt Russell take lessons to be able to drive an 18-wheeler so that he could actually drive the Pork Chop Express. And he didn't have to have another driver to come in and take over for those scenes. Let's see. And of course, everybody knows this one. Both actresses playing Gracie Law and Mao Yin, they actually didn't have green eyes. They had to use contacts with them. They actually both had brown eyes. Okay. During the film in Big Trouble in Little China, John Carpenter first met Jeff Imada, who played Needles. You don't know the name, but the gang members in the car, they kidnapped the girl, Miao Yin, the ones that are driving in the car. It's one of those actors. During filming, he'd go behind camera and look at the work to see if there's a way to improve the change. Carpenter was so impressed that he used him as stunt coordinator for all his films after that.
Oh, wow.
He was the man that they got a relationship like Kurt Russell and John Carpenter. So, let's see. The Chang Sings and Wing Kong, Wing Tongs are based on two actual gangs that existed in New York's Chinatown in the early 20th century. So they are, their costumes and everything are based upon an actual gang. Let's see. There's another one. Oh, one thing. You know the Ake Chen's tour bus?
Mm-hmm.
That's still in use today. That's an actual tour bus in Chinatown that you could take a tour on and ride on.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, that's a bucket list.
Yeah.
So that'd be cool. Okay. You know where Kurt Russell goes into the brothel? He's wearing that funky suit with the glasses.
Yeah.
That suit is the same suit he wore in the 1980 film Used Cars.
Oh, really?
Yes. You remember that?
Yeah. That was not costuming. That was his suit.
that was a suit that he used in that movie also. So a little homage to that. Okay. During filming of the movie, he was actually sick with the flu. So like all the scenes you see where he's like sweating like crazy from running, he's really sweating. It's him being sick with the flu during filming. Yeah, there's a tourist bus thing. During wedding ceremony, when Lo Pan's trying to stick the needle in her arm, he actually accidentally cut the actress, Susie Pye, who played Miao Yin. She was really bleeding and stuff, so he really cut her. Okay, this is a cool one that I saw. When lightning, okay, the storm, when he's killed at the end scene, when they dump that thing on him and everything, and lightning flashes on the screen, some of the lightning form. I wanted to see if I could pick this out, but some of the lightning forms a Chinese symbol. And that symbol is the Chinese symbol that translates to carpenter.
Oh, sweet.
I want to try to see if that that's really there. Because I think that's awesome. The song that plays during the end credits is sung by the Coupe de Villes, who is John Carpenter's band at the time. Yes. Band consisted, you'll love this, John Carpenter, Nick Castle, and Tommy Lee Wallace, who is original director on the second unit director on Big Trouble in Little China, but as you know, Nick Castle, Michael Myers, in the original Halloween.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had a band together. During test screening, feedback for this movie was extremely positive. They thought it was going to be great. Unfortunately, when they released the movie, it was a box office failure.
Yeah.
And a lot of it had to do with the 20th Century Fox didn't promote it or market it at all.
Yeah, I knew it bombed, and that's Big Trouble in Little China is what made John Carpenter leave Hollywood.
Well, one thing, the next thing I was going to say, John Carpenter, after Big Trouble in Little China, refused to work with big studios anymore and only did independent films after that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was it. He was done with working with big studios, and it probably started off with them not wanting to use Kurt Russell and wanting to use another big name. And they're the ones that demanded the scene that put Kurt Russell to the front and kind of put Wayne Chee to the side. So I think that I can see why he's successful enough. He didn't need them anymore. Let's see. As you know, James Hong, who's Lo Pan, is also in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Does he do a voice in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as somebody, I think?
Is he in the cartoon or in the...
It's the cartoon. I can't remember the name of the character, though.
Maybe Splinter?
No, I don't think it was Splinter. Let's see. Of course, Raiden character in Mortal Kombat is designed after Lightning from the Three Storms. And that's about it. The other fact I don't think is an actual true one. I hope it's not a true one at least. But the other fact was that a remake is in the works right now. Starring Dwayne Johnson. So hopefully The Rock isn't going to try to...
No, you can't. You can't redo it.
No.
That was another thing too, is because with all the special effects, they hold up.
Oh yeah,
like, there's no. Very I mean, well. Especially like with the storms, the lightning, the flying around. You know, the what we would call like the CGI, like the stuff that they had to add post production, and like for them, you know, floating and the lightning and stuff like that. It doesn't look overlaid. I mean, it looks legit on film. It doesn't look like an early 80s special effect. Mm-hmm. And because sometimes you see those old ones and you're like, oh, you know, they could remake that with CGI or whatever, but you don't need to.
Right.
It's, I mean, it holds up.
Well, like, you know, the eye, the floating ball, mm-hmm. that was three puppeteers working with that. That they overlaid it, but it was three people working that thing to where they can make it float and everything move on it and everything.
Yeah, it's because it had a lot of expression.
It was some work. But yeah, everything holds up with it, man. Even the monster that comes out of the wall and grabs that guy and stuff, and just everything. The movie is... it's a great movie.
Yeah, and that one demon was reminding me of Fluffy from Creepshow.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I mean, it looks like him.
Right.
But... Well, cool, man. Yeah, I love doing the fresh eyes because it makes you, like, the rules make you have to, like, think about it differently than right. just like, oh, I love this movie.
Do you find yourself doing that with other movies now too?
I do, because in fact, I just watched Meatballs the other day.
Well, I was going to bring up another one too. I'll let you go ahead and go with Meatballs.
Well, I mean, it was always on when I was a kid, and like Meatballs, Meatballs 2, like the one with the alien, I think that was like part 3 or 4, I don't uh-huh. remember. But like,
God, I remember that one with the alien. It was horrible.
Oh yeah, but they were always on. Remember yeah. when you were a kid, they were just on all the time. And so you had like the difference. Like I think the first no, because the first one was Bill Murray. And the second one was Joel Murray, uh-huh. his younger brother. And Joel Murray was in like he was in
One Crazy Summer,
and a couple of, like he was a younger version of Bill Murray. Yep. Still, you know, very cocky and very, you know, mouthy and stuff. And so they had all kind of, like, all of those movies that kind of just put themselves together in my head as, you know, Meatballs in general. But the other night I came home and was like, man, I want to watch something that's not too serious to think about. I just want something like just brain candy. And I threw on Meatballs and, like, I'm kind of watching it fresh eyes wise and being like, because it's been forever since I just sat down and watched the movie by itself. And I'm like, ah, we're not going to really talk about Meatballs on Scary Dad. But I mean, it's just. It's,
well, I'll watch a movie now and like.
So I'm noticing because Meatballs was directed by Ivan Reitman mm-hmm. and Bill Murray, it was also his first starring role in a movie. And if you know what comes after Meatballs for both of those guys, Ghostbusters, mm-hmm. You see a lot of Ghostbusters in Meatballs, just with the way Bill Murray talks and, right. and the way he, you know, his attitude and things and kind of the cinematography, just kind of the angles and the mm-hmm. way that they do stuff. So it's cool to watch these movies again just from,
yeah,
you know.
Well, just, and also just with, have, like, why. Spies Like Us. Remember Spies mm-hmm. Like Us? I watched that yesterday. And I'm watching it, and, you know, I've started looking at movies in a different way and also looking at all characters. I don't just focus on the main characters. I see everybody that's in there. Mm-hmm. And what I'll do is I'll look for people. I'm like, wait, I think that's so-and-so. And now we have the internet. I can look up on IMDb real quick and see if, like, a certain person is actually in it. You remember Spies Like Us?
Oh, yeah. It's been a while.
Okay, though. So... There's a drive, a closed down drive-in movie theater where the bad guys are holed up underground, where they're trying to launch this missile to go ahead hit the United States to start World War III. And when the CIA guys get to the drive-in theater, there's some guards like outside of the snack shack, and they're like, go in and get a Dr. Pepper. So they go in. You know who one of those guards is? Ted Raimi.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah, I was like, oh my God, that is Ted. I looked it up real quick. Sure enough, Ted Raimi.
That's awesome.
Drive-in guard for Spies Like Us. But yeah, just seeing that kind of stuff is awesome. And also, you've seen Kingpin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you know the girl in Kingpin?
Yeah.
She's the same one as the, know the Russians that are out in the snow? She's the one that comes out of the tent that Dan Aykroyd falls in love with.
Nice.
It's the same one. It's pretty crazy, dude. Just, but yeah, I've watched movies like that all the time. Spies Like Us is awesome, dude.
Yeah.
It is a funny-ass movie.
Yeah, that was the other one I was going to mention. we watched Stripes mm-hmm. a few months ago as well. Just, and again, Stripes is not...
I've seen the movie so many times.
Well, it's not for a horror podcast, but I'm watching Stripes, and that was another one that Ivan Reitman did with Bill Murray, yeah. And like again, you just
and see, Harold Ramis too.
Yeah, well, you got Harold Ramis and John Candy.
But no, as far as for the Ivan Reitman connection, yeah. You got Don Landis and you got Bill Murray.
Yeah, yeah. But no, like just. But watching movies like I haven't seen in a while, and just kind of like I'm thinking about it in the fresh eyes.
And learning more about the background of
a movie. Rather than just throwing on a movie and letting it play, yeah. And being like, oh yeah, you know, I've seen this. Now that when we started doing this, I'm like, I'm really paying attention and like seeing a lot of color and texture that I haven't seen in a while.
Right. It's so fun, dude.
It is a lot of fun. It's really changed my perspective on a lot of movies, making me appreciate them more.
Yeah.
A lot more trivia involved as well. You know, it's like when we did The Lost Boys, and it's like just little things like never paid attention to the fact that it was only a couple of days. It felt like it was maybe a summer, but it was just like maybe 3 days long.
Yeah,
the whole movie. When we did The Thing, and it's like, oh, okay, well, you know, the Norwegians and the dog, like,
yeah,
I was like, man, they spoiled the movie right at the beginning. You know, they spoiled it because I guess in Swedish or whatever, they said that's a thing, and it turns into other things, and it kills people. Like right in the first, like if you were in Norway and watching that movie,
you knew what was happening.
Yeah. So like just different things like that make it all more fun because you know what he's saying now.
Yeah.
You know, before he's just like, oh, and they're like, he's crazy and we'll shoot him. But now you know what he's talking about. You're like, but yeah, dude, the Fresh Eyes are awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll have to do another one soon.
Cool. Well, I think that's going to be it. I'm going to get on the road, get back to the house, and eat some tacos.
Good deal, man.
You have a good one. We'll see you next week.
Later.